Hello and welcome to the Outpost Frequencies podcast. I am your host today, not George Lucas. Here we go.
Oh, it's alive! It's alive! It's alive!
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass.
Why so serious?
You never know what you're gonna get.
I drink your milkshake!
Oh, it sounds all professional, doesn't it? Look at me, look. Anyway, hello and welcome back to the podcast for those of you who do listen. Going to be going through some of the movies that I've seen over the past week. I've seen a lot, and it's because it's been Halloween, I've been watching an awful lot of horror. And some really good ones. I hope you all had a good Halloween and watched some scary movies. I can't say I saw anything particularly outstandingly scary, but you know, some of it was all right. We're going to start off with a couple of werewolf movies. Missed both of them when they first came out. First of all, The Beast Must Die, 1974. Now, I really liked this. It introduced it by saying, this is a mystery movie, and you are the detective. You have to figure out who the werewolf is. It actually did that, and then it's about near the end of the movie, it said, we are now going to have a break where you need to guess who the werewolf was. Really enjoyed that, because it was a really original way of doing it. It starred Calvin Lockhart, Peter Cushing, Madeline Clark, Charles Gray, quite a few big names actually, Michael Gambon, and a few other people. It was really good. It was very much, well, the modern version that I've seen recently was Werewolves Within, which was again a kind of murder mystery, but you had to figure out who the werewolf was. This took it to more of the extreme and actually introduced the movie saying, you have to guess who the bad guy is. Do you know what? I really like this. It was really good. It's quite cheesy. I liked Calvin Lockhart because he played apparently the world's best hunter. And he had hunted every animal on the planet. And I think what a lady at one point says, if there's a creature, then he's shot it. But at the beginning of the movie, he's being chased by some men and stuff. I'm not being funny. He was like the worst hunter in the entire world. And when he finally catches up with the werewolf, he just tries to shoot it with a machine gun. I didn't see him as a particularly good hunter. And more of a, I've got more weapons and hopefully one of the bullets will hit. It was quite good. And Peter Cushing played this German guy in it all the way through. It was a really, really good werewolf movie, though. The Beast Must Die of 1974. The next one I watched was, my internet's being slow, here we go, Silver Bullet. Now, this was a completely different take. I think the first one, I would say, was it a British production? Kind of. This was very American. This was, like I say, Silver Bullet of 1985, and it starred Gary Busey, Everett McGill, Corey Haim, Megan Fellows, Robin Groves, and a few other people, Terry O'Quinn, and a few other people. Lawrence Tinnery was in it as well. This was all right, but it was far too cheesy of a movie. Corey Haim played a disabled kid in a, when I say a motorized wheelchair, I mean it properly had like a proper motor in it, not an electric one, a petrol one. It was like a really odd twist. And then Gary Busey at some point makes him it's like a converted superbike wheelchair. It's kind of the only thing I remember about it. There's kind of a good twist of who you think is the bad guy and who's not and so forth and who the werewolf is. The other bit that got me was, there's a bit where Everett McGill, it isn't a dream sequence, but he's in his church because he's the father, and he's in the church giving his sermon, and everybody turns into werewolves. And there was a bit where a werewolf was playing the organ. It was proper funny. It proper made me laugh because I thought the thing was real until he decides it was a dream sequence. But it was not as good. Out of the two werewolf movies that I've seen this week, The Beast Must Die I thought was much better than Silver Bullet of 1985. Another one from 1985, Demons. Now, this was produced by Dario Argento. I should say his name all the time. I'm flustered over it. Dario Argento. That's it. There you go. people get invited to a movie house to show a film. And then the things that start happening on the film screen starts happening to the people in the audience. Now, Dario Argento is one of those guys who makes some of his stuff is absolutely brilliant. Some of it is really cheap and crappy, a bit like Roger Corman type of thing. This was only produced by him. It wasn't directed by him. I'm not going to read out any of the names because there's no names that I recognise from it. They're mostly, I'm going to say German actors, maybe Italian actors, because I think it was an Italian production. This was kind of all right. There were bits in it. The acting is atrocious. I mean, it's awful. All of the people are, you know, they literally say, hey, come on, let's go over here. You know, when nobody says that in real life, you know, when you're walking down a corridor and stuff. The production was, it's at one point pretty good because they dropped a helicopter in the middle of this cinema. And I did think to myself, my God, that must have cost a lot of money. But that's kind of like it. My favourite part was, this was made in, when did I say, 1985. So they invite people to come to a screening of a movie. They invite a blind guy. This is before, obviously, audio description and everything else. And it proper made me laugh that all these people are turning up going, oh, let's get some popcorn. Let's get some, you know, drinks and so forth. And then this blind guy turns up. I'm thinking, right, so we just turned up to watch a film. Brilliant. So who else have they been giving tickets out to? It was pretty bad, but sort of so bad, I actually kind of enjoyed it. But it was a mix of a movie. It's not the kind of movie I think I'd watch again. It was kind of good to see that classic 80s horror, but that's about it. Going really old school now. 1963. The Man with the X-Ray Eyes. Now, this was Roger Corman. Funny enough, I think I mentioned him last week. So, a doctor uses special eye drops to give himself X-ray vision. This was a very strange film. It was very well done. It was actually very creepy towards the end because his eyes start to bleed and everything, and it's a bit weird. The whole X-ray thing is all done wrong because the X-ray thing is always done wrong whenever they do this thing. He goes to a party. Now, the movie is a PG, so there was no like nudity or anything in it. But everybody's dancing around, but he can see through all their clothes. And it's weird because all he can see through is through their clothes. He can't see through the floor or through the wall or anything else. The party looks the same. It's just people are dancing naked. And I kept thinking, this wouldn't make any sense because, like I say, not getting too crude about it, but if the ladies were wearing bras, everything would be squashed. They didn't think these things through very well. It was obviously sort of X-ray eyes only to close. The other bit that really got me about this, which I really liked, was the main guy, Ray Milland. He was a doctor who was or a scientist making this thing. He lit a cigarette with a Bunsen burner because obviously that's what scientists do. You know, oh, fancy a fag, pick up a Bunsen burner and light your cigarette with it. When I say fag, that's the expression that we use for cigarette in the UK, by the way, for any of our American listeners. Just only realised, I hope nobody complains about this. That's just the expression that was used. Anyway, that was The Man with the X-Ray Eyes, 1963. Tales from the Crypt, 1972. Now, this was a English classic, if you like. Freddie Francis directed it. Great cast, because you had Joan Collins, Peter Cushing, Ralph Richardson. Just trying to see who else here. Oh, actually, that's pretty much about it. There's a few other names that you probably recognise if you did see it. Now, the story concerns five strangers get lost in a crypt after meeting a mysterious crypt keeper. Sorry, that was an email. Five strangers get lost in a crypt after meeting the mysterious crypt keeper, receive visions of how they will die. It's a portmanteau, so it's one of those stories that's been told through the time of, you know, five different stories all combined in one with one theme locking it in altogether. It was quite good. It was rated as a PG, but I thought it was actually a little bit more violent than that. I'm just trying to think of it now. I can't remember any of the segments apart from Joan Collins, who gets killed by Father Christmas. Yep, can't remember any of the other stories. Oh, no, wait, sorry, just suddenly remembered. The story with Peter Cushing was actually really horrible. Basically, Peter Cushing lived in a very posh area of London and he had a nice house and everything else. But all the council kids would come down and talk to him and keep him company. And he was very friendly with them. Nothing funny, just friendly with the kids. All the other neighbours hated it because it was like they lived in a posh area and they didn't want these council kids down there and stuff. So they all tried to run Peter Cushing out. And there was a scene in there where one of the guys, first of all, they dig up all his roses and ruin them, which is like quite upsetting for poor Peter Cushing. But then one of the guys writes a load of Christmas cards to Peter Cushing. And one of them, I can't remember the exact wording, but it sort of says, "You're here, so-and-so, why don't you jump in the river and drown?" And Peter Cushing's acting is fantastic in it because he's really proper upset about it. It was actually quite heartbreaking to think this poor dear old man was just trying to live his life and all his neighbours hated him, but he got his revenge. That's what I'm going to say about that. That's the only story I can remember, actually. Like I say, I can't really remember the others. That's what I think is a good or a bad film, if I can remember it. And that's I probably need to watch it again. It was quite good. It was 1972. Tales from the Crypt. It wasn't bad. My computer's being slow today. Right, okay, then there we go. Right, so, now, another note. Oh, that was 72, sorry, Tales from the Crypt. 1975, The Stepford Wives. Now, you probably, I don't know if you know that there are two versions. There's the original, and then there's the remake. Now, the remake starred Nicole Kidman, Matthew Broderick, I think it was. I think it was directed by, like, Frank Oz or somebody like that. And they turned it into sort of quite a comedy of how women are oppressed and so forth and everything else. And these husbands turn their wives into robots. This original was, I want to call it a horror. It's a heavy thriller. But she basically moves to this town and some of the women there are just perfect women. They have nothing wrong with them. They are great in bed and just everything about them is perfect. And she can't quite understand why. And then one of her friends changes. And it turns out that the men are, was it a clone? I think they were clones. And it had a really good ending. But the original is a really good thriller. Really, really good thriller. It had Catherine Ross in it, who is absolutely gorgeous. I'm just trying to see if they, and Nanette Newman was in it. Which, being English, she was very big on English TV. I can't see anybody else's names who jumps out at me. It was a really, really good thriller. If you haven't seen it, like I say, the remake turned it much more into a comedy, whereas this was much more of a horror. And like I say, a really good ending to it as well. That's the 1975 version of The Stepford Wives. Right, so, on our 31 Days of Horror, under the top 10 slashers that Sean did, one of the movies was My Bloody Valentine, 1981. I've never seen this, so I thought I would give it a try. I don't know why Sean put it in his top 10. This was bloody awful. I don't mind a good slasher movie. I don't mind a good slasher movie when it's got a good hook to it. Like Freddy Krueger, like Friday the 13th, even Michael Myers and so forth, you know, you kind of know why the killer is killing. In My Bloody Valentine, if you don't know the story, it's in a mining town, and it turns out that a long time ago, one of the miners got trapped in the mine with some of the others and ended up eating them because he was trapped, and then was put into a mental home. And then when he came out, which I think was around, must have been around the time of Valentine, I must have missed it, but he said that they should never have another Valentine's Day party celebration. And so then they decide to have one when he's let out of the mental asylum and he goes around killing people. Not the greatest of storylines, I didn't think. And it also made me laugh that the killer in it would constantly go around in his overalls, mask and breathing apparatus. And he seemed to like never take it off at all. And I kept thinking, how did he go shopping? Surely somebody would have said something. You know, if you're in a supermarket and a man is dressed up like this and in February, because it's set, you know, around Valentine's Day. Halloween's not till October, mate. Oh, no, this is what I always wear. I didn't get it. I thought it was bloody stupid, to be honest. The kills were good in it. The kills were quite good. There was a great scene where somebody falls down a thing. And it's obviously a body, a dummy that hits the floor, which was quite funny. But yeah, that was My Bloody Valentine, 1981. Now new on streaming at the moment, Apex, 2021, starring Neil McDowell. McDowell is his name. I always call him the backup Paul Walker. because he looks like Paul Walker, and Bruce Willis. This was absolutely terrible. My goodness me, what is wrong with Bruce Willis making stuff like this? At least Nick Cage is out there making sort of like weird stuff that's interesting to watch. This Apex was 5 elite hunters pay to hunt down a man on a deserted island, only to find themselves becoming the prey. All right, it's a story which has been done before. Nah. Bruce Willis is supposed to be this ex-CIA special SEAL services blokey, blah, 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 blah. He's in jail. He's getting given a chance for freedom if he becomes hunted on this island. It's set in the future, so there's teleportation systems and stuff, which, again, just wasn't needed at all. There was genuinely a scene where, first of all, he knows he's going to be hunted, okay? So he gets a jacket, a nice bright red jacket, and he knows that the island is very wooded. So, of course, you know, if you're going to be hunted by other human beings, brightest jacket as you can find is going to be the best thing. And somebody makes a joke about it, but it didn't make any sense. But then there is genuinely a scene where he is sat picking berries and smoking a cigar while he's being hunted. And to be fair, Bruce Willis wasn't actually in it that much. Most of the movie was about the other hunters turning on each other and so forth. And so you had Bruce sort of in the bushes, heavy breathing, watching them. Not heavy breathing, but, you know, it's not like that killer kind of thing. And, oh, this was just, it was absolute crap. I'm going to say, I've taken one for the team, so you don't have to watch it. Okay, Apex is on streaming at the moment with Bruce Willis. Don't bother. Absolute pile of crap. Parents, 1989. Now, this was a... I thought this was going to be quite a amusing comic take on cannibalism. Which I suddenly realised sounds absolutely awful. But I thought it was going to be quite a sort of comic, you know, movie. It looked quite cutesy. Like in, if you've seen the film Fido with Billy Connolly, where Fido plays the zombie. That was quite funny in the way it was done. And I thought Parents was going to be the same thing. Basically, a young boy living in the 50s suburbia suspects his parents are cannibalistic murderers. And like I say, I thought it was going to be quite tongue-in-cheek in the way it was done. Some of it was actually quite scary and quite creepy. And it was not it's not the tone I expected or went in on. It stars Randy Quaid and Mary Beth Hurt and Sandy Dennis and Brian Murawski, directed by Bob Babylon. It something completely missed me, and like I said, I'd never seen it before, and I thought, go on, give it a go, because like I say, because the poster made it look quite amusing. This was not the movie I expected. It was quite... Oh, dear, yeah, no, it was not good. Very, 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 very bizarre movie. It's not... I thought it was kind of like a horror you could watch with the kids, kind of like Gremlins-y type thing. Or like I say, that Fido is quite, you know, it's a PG-13. This was not that. This was definitely not that. But it did have, interesting nerdy fact, Randy Quaid in it. And I met Randy Quaid once. I was an extra in a movie he was called, which you've never heard of. It was called The Magical Legend of the Leprechauns. It was shot for, oh, one of the TV networks in America. I forget which one now. But it was this really cheesy movie about leprechauns. And I met Randy Quaid, and he was a very nice guy. So whenever I see Randy Quaid, I'm quite happy to watch him, because I always think, ah, nice guy, Randy Quaid. That was Parents, 1989. Dr. Terror's House of Horrors. This was, again, first of all, this was 1965. It's another portmanteau, so it's a bunch of stories that are all linked. What I didn't understand, Freddie Francis again, actually, what I didn't understand was it was called Dr. Terror's House of Horrors, and it was set on a train. So that didn't make any sense. Aboard a British train, mysterious fortune teller Dr. Shrek uses tarot cards to read the fortunes of five fellow passengers. Okay, so like I say, nice little portmanteau. It was not bad. It was a good cast. You had Christopher Lee, Peter Cushing, I can't see the other names now. Katie Wilde, Alan Freeman. Roy Castle was in it. Bernard Lee, Michael Goff, Donald Sutherland. He's very low down on the thing there. Jeremy Kemp. It was, like I say, it was a very good cast. And Christopher Lee doesn't believe in this tarot, and it's all a load of rubbish. Again, funny enough, Peter Cushing plays a German in this with big eyebrows. Just remember his big eyebrows. And he basically tells everybody's fortunes. And it was quite... The stories were quite good. The one with Roy Castle, he steals some music from some voodoo people. Just trying to think of the other stories now. See, again, that's not a good sign, is it? Christopher Lee played a art critic, which was quite a good story, with Michael Goff. That was quite a good story. There was one with a werewolf. Because, see, I'm looking at it on IMDb and it says one with a werewolf. I can't remember the one with the werewolf. Maybe I need to watch less films so I can actually take in the ones that I have seen. What I do remember is I quite enjoyed this. There was a twist at the end, but it's an obvious twist. Scenes of the film was made in 1965. That's Dr. Terror's House of Horrors, 1965. Now, this one, I'm going to get into trouble for saying this. Blazing Saddles, 1974. I don't think I've ever seen it all the way through. And it came up on one of my lists, and I thought, you know what? I genuinely don't think I've seen Blazing Saddles before. So I watched it. I proper belly laughed through most of it. Some people obviously wouldn't watch it today because they find it very offensive. There are scenes in there I am thinking to myself, I'm not going to repeat them, but they did proper make me laugh in it. It was really funny. I love Mel Brooks anyway. I think all of his films are great. They're very watchable, and they some of his humour is very stupid, and I like stupid humour, and Blazing Saddles proper made me laugh in a lot of places. It's not for everyone. Like I say, some people are going to find it offensive nowadays. It's a scene with the old woman. And like I say, I'm not going to repeat what she said, but it was just so funny the way she said it. If you haven't seen Blazing Saddles, if you've got a stupid sense of humour and you're not easily offended, you have to watch it. It's brilliant. There's a whole scene with farting. That's kind of sums it up. Blazing Saddles, 1974. Then we went to more serious and more modern, 2016, The Autopsy of Jane Doe. Now, I have seen this once before when it first came out, but I decided to revisit it. A father and son, both coroners, are pulled into a complex mystery while attempting to identify the body of a young woman who is apparently harbouring a dark secret. Brian Cox and Emile Hirsch are the main players, the father and son. I won't say which way around they play. I've seen this before and I really liked it. I thought I'm going to watch it again. It is fantastic. It is such a good horror movie. It kind of goes in a direction that you probably don't think. So basically, the police turn up at a house and a body is perfectly preserved being buried. So they take this body to the... Brian Cox and Emile Hirsch, like I say, who are both coroners. And they then start to think to them, you know, they've got to figure out why she's died. COD, COD, the police keep calling it a cause of death. As they start to figure out why she died, things get weirder and weirder. It is a really, really good horror film, especially when you think that basically that there's only the two main characters that carry the movie through. There's not many films that can do that where you've got just the two characters, but they both of them are absolutely fantastic. I mean, Brian Cox is brilliant. You know, I can't think of anything that I've ever seen him in where he was bad in it. Emile Hirsch is a very accomplished actor. If you like a good horror, thriller, mystery, definitely recommend The Autopsy of Jane Doe of 2016. Brilliant movie. Going back, I said last week, I've been going through a whole John Grisham thing. Runaway Jury of 2003. Have seen it before. Thought I'd put it on again. A juror on the inside and a woman on the outside manipulate court trials involving a major gun manufacturer. This is really well done. Really, really, really good one. I think I saw the Pelican Brief a little while ago. Wasn't massively impressed with that. This one's brilliant. The cast: John Cusack, Rachel Weisz, Gene Hackman, Dustin Hoffman, Bruce Davidson, Bruce McGill, Jeremy Piven, Who else we got there? Bill Nunn, Jennifer Beals. The film was brilliant. It's really, really good. Basically, that a woman is suing a gun company for producing a gun that killed her husband. The gun company have got Gene Hackman in to make sure the jury votes the right way. But unbeknownst to Gene Hackman, John Cusack and Rachel Weisz have got their own means of manipulating things. It's really, really good. It's a really good thriller. Keeps you on the edge of your seat all the way through. I really enjoyed this film. John Grisham does write a good story, but he does need a decent director to tell it. Like I say, The Pelican Brief, I wasn't massively blown away by. But what's the other one I saw the other day? Rainmaker. That was very, very good. This was very much on the same lines. If you get a chance to, if you'd like a decent thriller, it's a PG-13, so it's, you know, fairly family friendly. And I suppose the kids would enjoy it. There's no dancing monsters or purple dinosaurs or anything. But no, Runaway Jury of 2003, really good thriller, thoroughly enjoyed it. Another anthology portmanteau, The Trilogy of Terror. Now, somebody mentioned on our confession from the Laugh Movie Outpost on horror about movies that really scared you, somebody mentioned The Last Story. Now, this was an interesting way that they put this all together. It's made in 1975, Trilogy of Terror, directed by Dan Curtis, and it stars Karen Black, George Gaines, John Carlin, Jim Storm, and a few other people. But Karen Black plays the main protagonist through all three stories, all three very different stories. And I remembered all three of them. Did I remember the middle one? Yes, I did, yes. Just have to think then. The first story, she's a teacher. She gets seduced by one of her students. But that's only the start of the story. It's very, very good. It's very, very well done. The second one, she keeps saying that her sister is causing loads of problems. The second one I thought was very obvious where it was going to go. As you're watching it, it plays out quite obviously, you know, how the story is going to play out. But the third one, had this, I can't remember what it was called now. I'm just trying to see if I can find the name of it now. Basically, the third one was about a Native American tribal doll that comes to life and terrorizes this woman. I wouldn't say it was scary as such, but it was creepy as hell. She buys this doll, and the doll's, and it says, because it comes with instructions, this doll, and it says, do not remove the chain around its waist, because if you do, you will unleash the doll and it will come to life and blah, 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 blah. Of course, chain comes off. This little thing running around with a knife was actually really, really creepy. They had this awful, like, all the way through it, and very low camera angles as it's chasing her through. There are quite obvious moments where it's like, seriously, love, what are you doing? Just, you know, you can easily get rid of this. She puts it in a suitcase at one point. It was really creepy, though. It was really, really creepy. I can imagine if, as a kid, that would have been terrifying. I'm a older, more mature person, so I wasn't terrified. But it was quite creepy. What did get me then, funny enough, I just remember the ending. The ending of it, I'm not gonna spoil anything, but the ending of the third one was really creepy. Really creepy. It was really good. I think it was made for TV because it kept saying teleplay. The teleplay was done by, not screenplay, but it was done something. I think it was done for TV, but it was a really, if you can get, I had trouble finding it, but if you can find it, The Trilogy of Terror, yeah, 1975 TV movie. Definitely worth watching. Now we come on to something very, 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 very different. The Cemetery Man, also known as De La Morte De La Mort, 1994, starring Rupert Everett. Now, if you've heard of this movie, you know where this is going to go. If you haven't, I don't know how to describe it. The plot is, a cemetery man must kill the dead a second time when they become zombies. Tip of the iceberg. This film was bizarre. Rupert Everett, I've always considered him a I don't want to say a classical actor, but I mean, he plays Prince Charming in Shrek 2, I think it is. And I can't think of much else he's actually been in. But I've always considered him quite a classical actor. This was not a classical movie. It was bizarre. Any movie where you've got zombie Boy Scouts coming back to life and then getting their heads blown off. I mean, I don't know what you describe that as. Who you call it. It was a really weird film. I can't remember who initially said it. I'm sure it must have been on the talkback somewhere along the line. But yeah, The Cemetery Man. It was just... like I say, I don't know how to describe it. The only thing I did find about it is I'm sure somebody spoke about the end of the movie. But when I got to the end, I found it very anticlimactical. Like it almost didn't finish. The film didn't end... at all. It just sort of came to a stop, and you know, the story just came to a stop and the credits rolled, and that was kind of it. There wasn't like a climactical build up or anything. It's a very strange film. The girl in it was nice. Anna Felci. She was very beautiful. Just happened to remember that because she shows up as several different characters in it. It's a very, very odd movie. It's not a Hollywood movie. Put it that way. It's one of those films that you would never ever see in a box office. It was weird. But yeah, that's the Cemetery Man, De La Morte De La Mort, 1994. Going old school again. The Kentucky Fried Movie. Now, I think this was 1977. I think I've seen this before. But it came up on one of my lists and I thought, do you know what? I'll give it another go. Directed by John Landis, who I love. Series of short, highly irreverent and often tasteless skits. That sums it up beautifully. Can't watch it if you're easily offended. I'm not. It takes an awful lot to offend me. I'm very much somebody who lets things wash over my head and stuff. This movie, though, again, proper made me laugh. Some of it is utterly stupid. Some of it is actually very clever. And then some of it is, I think I laughed all the way through this. There's a brilliant parody of Enter the Dragon, which was hilarious. There was one joke, I feel bad for laughing at this. There was one joke where the guy who's gone in to investigate this bad guy, like it, basically he's been sent in by the CIA to investigate this because this guy's making drugs and stuff. And he says, oh, you've come to see my operation. And he pulls up his shirt and shows him his scar. So stupid. I really laughed at that. I like that stupid sense of humour. I thought it was, it was proper funny. It's not one for the kids. There's quite a lot of boobage in it. But not in a bad way. And also, this is a moving fact you probably didn't know, but it was done by John Landis. Now, I like John Landis, but John Landis has got a thing about putting in his movies a movie called See You Next Wednesday. And he said it the other way around then, because we all know what that is, the previous day. But yeah, in all of his films, he's always put in See You Next Wednesday. In The Blues Brothers, it's a scene where... I think the police car drives through a big movie poster and the movie poster says, see you next Wednesday. I don't know where it is in Trading Places. I'm just trying to think of the other ones he's done here. Animal House. In American Werewolf in London, when they sat in the porno theatre, the movie is called See You Next Wednesday. And John Landis always does that. And there's a section in this Kentucky Fried movie where this guy goes, that's right, this guy goes to see... This guy goes to see a movie in Feelorama. So he goes in and he sits down and some bloke comes and stands behind him, an usher stands behind him. Oh, right, okay. And then it says on the screen, you hear, oh, I see you're smoking again. And so this usher lights a cigarette and blows it in this bloke's face. All right. And then there's a love scene and she's going, oh, I love playing with your hair. So the guy behind the usher starts playing with this bloke's hair and everything else. And then at one point she threatens him with a knife on the screen. So of course the usher holds a knife to this guy's neck. And it was really stupid. It was really funny. And then it said, oh, we hope you've enjoyed this presentation. And now as our next presentation is Deep Throat. So the guy runs out and the usher goes, oh. It was really childish. Another one that said was they were making a film. It was a trailer for a porno, and it said something like, "Never before has the beautiful act of lovemaking been so viciously ruin that joke. If you fancy something really funny, highly offensive, but just it just proper makes you laugh, the Kentucky Fried Movie 1977. Don't moan at me if it's too much." Another portmanteau, From Beyond the Grave. Now, Peter Cushing had the same makeup as he did in the Dr. Terror's House of Horrors, the train one, the house movie set on the train. He was running a small, trinket shop, secondhand shop. And anybody who came in and kind of tried to rip him off or steal from him ended up in big trouble. Brilliant cast. Peter Cushing, Ian Carmichael, Dinah Dawes, Donald Pleasance, David Warner, Leslie Ann Down. Now, one of the in the credits of the opening sequence, it said Angela Pleasance. And I thought, she must be related to Donald Pleasance because they've got the same second name. And it's quite an unusual second name. This poor girl is the spitting image of her dad. Donald Pleasance, don't get me wrong, brilliant actor, love him. Not exactly a heartthrob of a man. And his daughter in this looked like him in drag. I felt really sorry for her because, I mean, you know, just a woman looking like Donald Pleasance, it's not a good look. If you Google it, Donald Pleasance's daughter, especially in this From Beyond the Grave, not a good look. Besides that, the story was quite good. It was directed by Kevin Connor, who I thought originally was Kevin O'Connor, who was in The Mummy and things like that, but it's not. Before then, David Warner in the first story buys a mirror which needs blood, which was quite good. It was quite creepy. Again, I think this was a PG, but I thought it was actually quite scary for a PG. That was quite a good one. The second one is, oh, my dog's here. The second one was the one with Donald Pleasance, it's his daughter in it, which is quite a good story as well. It had, you know, Donald Pleasance in there as well. And then there was one with a door that opened a way to a secret place. I'm just trying to think now. I think there was a fourth story. I can't remember what the fourth story was now. But this was quite a decent portmanteau. It's not the greatest of films, but it was all right. That was From Beyond the Grave of 1974. This is weird now because I did the video, and if you go to the lastmovieoutpost.com, especially the YouTube channel, I've just finished a video on the movie twinning effect, how some movies come out at the same time about the same thing. And on there, I mentioned, only in passing, but I mentioned EdTV because it was very much twinned with Truman Show, you know, filming somebody's life. And they both came out roughly about the same time. I'd never seen EdTV. I don't know why. I think it's because I saw Truman Show when it first came out. I've loved Jim Carrey for a long time. And so I thought, right, okay, I'm not going to bother with EdTV because what's the point? So this was first watching for me. It's actually really good. That's because it was Ron Howard. It's directed by Ron Howard. It stars Matthew McConaughey and, goodness me, I have such brain farts sometimes. Woody Harrelson, idiot. Jenna Elfman, Jeffrey Blake, and you'll never guess what? Clint Howard. Didn't see that coming, did you? Not for a Ron Howard film. This was really, really good. It also had, Liz Hurley in it. Back in the day when she, I mean, you know, she's still a very attractive woman now, but I mean, she was gorgeous back in the day. This, and Martin Landau as well. This was a really, really decent film. It was actually quite good. Instead of The Truman Show, he was born and raised in that one place and, you know, raised with cameras on him all the time. Ed became famous because of a TV executive. Ellen DeGeneres was in it as well. When did her name come up? She played quite a major role in that. I'm looking through the IMDb and her name didn't even come up on the list. That's a bit rude. Maybe because of what she's been having with her show lately. Anyway, she was quite good in it as well. And it was quite good. I thought the ending was a little anticlimactical, But I thought it was quite good that sort of Ed goes to see his girlfriend's, his brother's girlfriend and help out, but then he ends up kissing her and all the complications of, you know, it's quite interesting that, I mean, this was made back in 1999. And I mean, even in the last 20 years, things have changed a hell of a lot. Obviously, you know, we've now got social media where people pretty much, you know, every time they take a dump, they put it on Instagram. And so we live very open lives. And is it a good thing or a bad thing? And it's in this, it was kind of showing that all that fame is not a good thing. And it, like I say, it was interesting watching it today because it's so prevalent today that social media puts everything out there. Who cares? Just say what you want, everything else. And yet we've seen, like, for example, how Twitter can ruin people's lives, Instagram, bullying on Instagram and that kind of thing. Quite an interesting subject. I'm a bit annoyed it's taken me so long to see Ed TV, but it was very good. And then lastly, I watched this morning, just because it came up on a list, Mars Attacks, 1996. Now, I love Tim Burton. I've always loved Tim Burton's work. Not everything he does, but most of the stuff. Mars Attacks is just one of those perfect films where nobody is taking themselves seriously. Everybody is having fun. Even the effects department are having fun. Because at one point they put Sarah Jessica Parker's head on a dog's body and stuff like that. It's a very stupid movie. Earth is invaded by Martians with unbeatable weapons and a cruel sense of humour. The cast is amazing. Jack Nicholson, twice. Pierce Brosnan, Sarah Jessica Parker, Annette Bening, Glenn Close, Danny DeVito, Martin Short, Michael J. Fox, Rod Steiger, Tom Jones, Lucas Haas, Natalie Portman. Oh, Lisa Marie, who he was married to at the time, is unusual. Jim Brown, Pam Grier, Jack Black, Paul Winfield. The cast is brilliant. And everybody knows they're making a stupid movie about Martians attacking Earth. And it's just, it's great. The graphics and the CG is now kind of dated, but it still works really, really well. I love the fact that it is a flying saucer. I think Sarah Jessica Parker refers to it. She's saying, it looks like a giant hubcap. And that's exactly what it looks like. There's no effort that's been put into these. But it's the tone of it is all just, oh, it's wonderful. I absolutely love Mars Attacks. It's funny. And just the ending is just ridiculous where you've got, they all get saved by Slim Whitman, which, again, it's not a spoiler because it's been out for years. If you haven't seen it, it's your own stupid fault. They all get saved by Slim Whitman. But at the very, very end, you've got Tom Cruise with all these animals and he just starts singing, it's not unusual to be loved by anyone. So cheesy. It's great. I love Mars Attacks. Like I say, I like Tim Burton. This is Tim Burton at one of his finest moments. It's a ridiculously stupid film, but highly entertaining. Mars Attacks of 1996. And that's all I've seen this week. So we're closing early. I'm sorry, I don't know whether I should. I still want to get people to write in and maybe ask me questions so I can maybe pad out the time a little bit. But nobody does. I'll tell you what I will, a story I will tell you is I should have been at this moment in time on a movie set. I joined a casting collective. I think it's called the Casting Collective. And they had a film that was filming down the road from me, about 30 minutes down the road from me. And they kept saying, you've been shortlisted for this film. And I was supposed to be on set for 2 weeks, 130 quid a day, because I was looking at getting a new laptop. And I was thinking, oh, great. I get to be on a movie. The movie, I'm not going to say any much more about it now. I think the movie was quite a big production because what they called it, I couldn't find. And so I bet it stars, I bet it had like Jessica Chastain in it because I love her. And I bet my scene was with her in a kiss or something. Really wishful thinking there. But yeah, I should have been on the set filming a movie with Jessica Chastain. with Jessica Chastain. That is just my little fantasy. I'm just lost in a world of red hair. No, I should have been on a movie set filming this film, but unfortunately it didn't come off. Right at the very last second, literally before they were going to do the makeup and everything else, they said they've spoken to the makeup department and you haven't got the look they're looking for. Thanks for the last, like, literally 2 months saying you've got this cracking job and it's going to pay a couple of grand, you're looking forward to it. No, you haven't got it now. No, sorry, yeah, we lied about that, bastards. Anyway, that's my news for this week. Like I say, if you've got any questions or anything you want to ask or anything that you think I should talk about, you can get me on Twitter at notgeorgelucas1. You can email me at notgeorgelucas1@gmail.com, or you can find me at thelastmovieoutpost.com in the talkback, because I try to contribute there as much as I possibly can. So yeah, get in touch, ask some questions. I know I'm only getting about 3 downloads on this, but you 3 people who are listening regularly, you know, ask me something, just anything. It can be anything. Well, not anything. How big's your willy or something like that. No, you know, just let's keep it movie related. And then in the meantime, I shall just carry on watching some films and seeing what I can find. I'm going to be kind of laying off horrors for a little while now, because I've kind of horrored myself out over Halloween. But what I will not be starting on yet is Christmas movies. Unless it's Die Hard or Home Alone or Nightmare Before Christmas. Those are the only 3 that I will see. Christmas related. I'm not a massive fan of Halloween, to be perfectly honest. I just jump on the bandwagon like everybody else. In the UK, we don't really do Halloween. I know Americans absolutely love it and they will go trick-or-treating and everything else. People don't go trick-or-treating over here. It's not a big thing over here. The shops make it a big thing. I haven't been to the shops yet, but I'm recording this on the 2nd of November, and I'm assuming all the Halloween stuff has gone in the bin and all the Christmas stuff is out now, you know, out on the shelves. So everybody can celebrate Christmas. Hooray. Bloody waste of time. Anyway, that's enough from me. Thank you very much for listening. Like I say, please go to thelastmovieoutpost.com and check out all your movie news, reviews, and everything cool about films. And in the meantime, enjoy some good movies.
I do wish we could chat longer.
Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it.
And I will have my vengeance. This life or the next.
To infinity and beyond!